What's up, everyone? I'm Andrew Steinwald, and this is Zima Red. On this show, we speak with the users, founders, and creatives that are diving into the world of unique digital assets, also called non-fungible tokens.
Andrew Steinwald is the managing partner of Sifirmion, an investment firm focused on the NFT ecosystem. All opinions expressed by Andrew and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Sifirmion. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Sifirmion or related entities may maintain positions in the assets discussed in this podcast.
My guest today is Rich. Rich is the lead at Ready Player DAO, which is a very large and successful play-to-earn guild. If you want a masterclass in all things play-to-earn, then you've come to the right episode. Rich is an expert, having managed his own play-to-earn guild before expanding into Ready Player DAO. On this episode, you will learn all the different methods to generate returns from activities like breeding, battling, and even future resource collection from digital land. I expect the play-to-earn economy to far surpass the global market for gaming, which is something like $200 billion per year, as play-to-earn attracts both gamers and people that want to earn extra income, which is essentially everyone. If you also believe in the long-term vision of the play-to-earn economy, then it's best to start your education now with this episode. Please enjoy my conversation with Rich. Rich, aka The Real Cabrera, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm super excited to chat with you. And to get us started, I'd love to hear a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so first off, thanks for having me. My background comes from tech. I think there's a lot of people in the space that come from tech background. And I think it kind of goes hand in hand, with Web3 and blockchain and all of that. But essentially, I used to work at a company called Red Hat. I was a solutions architect there. We assisted US governments in modernizing their technology stack. We also trained their employees on more modern approaches to technology and occasionally did like POCs and stuff like that. But that's the boring stuff, right? How I got into NFTs was through Axie Infinity. And that was from, being a fan of Mark Cuban and Alexis Ohanian. I saw they invested in Axie Infinity and saw there was a popular video about how it was helping people in the Philippines. So that's kind of what drew me into it.
Amazing. Awesome. Okay. So yeah, tell me more about your tech background at Red Hat. And you said you're a solutions architect. Like, what is that? I have no idea what that is. And then also you mentioned that you were helping improve the government's tech stack. Like, if you could just give some insight on there, is our government using like paper and pencil or is it more advanced than what I'm thinking?
Honestly, it varies like drastically depending on which agency you're talking to. I've talked to government agencies that are, still using, CDs to download updates and upload them. And then I've talked to agencies that are, hosting the world's largest supercomputer. And I won't name names and call any of them out, but it's pretty wild like how different they can be even within the same agency. Different departments can be drastically different. But yeah, so a solutions architect, you can think of it as a traditional architect, right? They put together the blueprints for what you're trying to build. So a solutions architect is on the software side of things instead of a physical building. The agency or company, et cetera, that's talking to an architect is basically saying, we want to build this application. How do we do it? And then the architect would put the blueprints together of, use wood and it should be in this structure, et cetera, et cetera. And then a solutions architect or a software architect would essentially say, you want to use, these languages for the front end. You need to make sure you can have these connections to the back end. Here's your database and how it all connects. So very high level, like that's what a solutions architect does. And then my role as a solutions architect specifically was focusing on like pre and post sales. So I would educate, our customers. I would train some of their engineers on how to use newer technologies and the difference of, what they were currently using to what they might be upgrading to or modernizing to. An example of that is, I helped train some NASA engineers on Kubernetes. And last year, they stuck Kubernetes on the ISS. So that's pretty cool claim to fame. I can't say there's a direct correlation, but, having them start using technology that I helped train some of the engineers over there with is pretty cool.
That's so cool. All right, so did you have exposure to crypto before? Exposure meaning like not financial exposure, meaning like you were interested in crypto and kind of like a someone who, you know, kind of believed in the whole ethos and that whole thing, or did you really get your kind of your full dive in when you saw Mark Cuban and Alexis Ohanian really invest in Axie? Like, what was that initial touch off point to then jump deeper into crypto?
Yeah, I was kind of in and out, embarrassingly enough. I kind of paper handed my approach to crypto a few times, but my like original purchase was Bitcoin in like 2013 for like $200. And I was in college at the time. So I was like trading it just to get, you know, beer money for the weekends. Crazy story. Like, you always kick yourself thinking like, man, I should have just held on to it and had a little bit more conviction. And then, you know, Ethereum came out, and the huge, you know, it blew up in like 2017. Bitcoin pumped up a lot as well, and people started jumping back into it. And that's when I was like, oh man, now Ethereum makes a lot of sense to me. Like, this is super cool, a decentralized approach to hosting applications. So that's always like struck a chord with me. It's made complete sense to me. And that's why I've, you know, stuck with Ethereum and been a big fan of that ever since.
Awesome. And then you mentioned that you saw like a video on Axie that was going around. Was that the video that was talking about people in the Philippines being able to earn a good living from playing this game?
Yeah. So there was a video put out around March of those people playing this game on their phone, and they're earning more money than they would at their regular job. And, you know, it was very like feel good. And I saw that Alexis Ohanian and Mark Cuban had invested, right? So I was like, okay, like, these are two very smart people. I'm a fan of both of them. I was following both of them on Twitter at the time. And I was like, let me check it out, because the current state of the games I was playing was like Apex Legends, Call of Duty, Warzone, like all these other games where you have to put money into this battle pass and you don't get anything out besides, you know, these in-game skins. And I was like, well, if I can put this money that I'm putting in anyways and potentially get something out, even if it is, you know, not much, I think that would be pretty cool. And then it turned out to just suck me in.
Okay, so I want you to describe the kind of your initial entry into Axie, because you learned about it through that video, maybe, or you kind of been hearing about it a bit, dove deeper after that video, and then especially after researching that Mark Cuban and Alexis Ohanian were in, you're like, okay, this is something very legit. So did you just kind of start playing right away and buy some Axies and like, you know, just jump right in, or were you studying for a long time and then made a move after, like, you thought you've kind of researched everything out, or like, what was your approach?
Yeah, this is funny. I was talking to someone about this the other day. You know, when you start researching something, it's very hard to know when to stop and when you know enough to get started, right? So like, my approach was like, okay, you know, I think at the time Axies were like $90 a pop for the floor, and those were generally eggs, right? So you don't, with eggs, just to explain it, you don't know what the Axie parts are. You have an idea of what kind of Axie it's going to be due to the shape and color of the egg, but beyond that, you don't really know if the Axie is going to be any good. So it's kind of a toss up. You can like look at the parents and try to get an idea. But it's really hard. So like, I had done some research and looked up, okay, a standard team at the time was, you know, Beast, Bird, Plant. So I was like, okay, let me just go in here and buy. And I'm like, okay, this is good research. Like, I'll have a standard team and I'll go from there. So I was like, let me just go in and buy a Beast egg, a Bird egg, and a Plant egg. And just some advice, that's not the right approach. So, yeah, my first team ended up just not being any good, and I immediately had to turn around and buy another team after waiting 5 days for them to hatch. So that was the other thing. I couldn't even play for the first 5 days because I didn't realize you had to wait so long from the hatch.
All right, so moving back a bit, like, how do you describe to maybe your friends that don't have exposure to crypto or NFTs, and like, how do you describe them? What is Axie Infinity?
Yeah, so the way I've heard it described is it's like similar to Pokemon card game on the blockchain, right? And you're using NFTs to buy your Pokemon. The thing is, it's still a little bit harder to understand in that sense, because they don't understand it. Like, if you don't understand NFTs, you're not going to understand what I'm telling you, right? So the way I describe it is like, okay, in Call of Duty, you have your gun and it has, you know, different traits that you put to it. Like, you can change the barrel, you can change the magazine, you can change like the bullets, and that adds to, the like specs of the gun and can make it better or worse, etc. So the way I transfer that over to how to describe an NFT is there's metadata in the NFT that will describe certain parts for the Axie, and those Axie parts have different traits and can, you know, add or subtract from the skill of the Axie as well, similar to, you know, how you would think about that gun in Call of Duty or any other game really that has anything like that. So the different cards will give you, you know, different damage, different shield, and different traits. And then I just explain, it's from there, it's 3v3, right? You face off against someone else's Pokemon team, if you want to think about it that way. And that's kind of how Arena works, the matchmaking. And obviously I always slide towards, hey, there's also LAN play that's coming out. So there's going to be an MMO part of things as well.
Awesome. Okay, so going back to your initial team, at what point did you kind of realize, okay, there is a meta here, and I need to understand the meta in order to really outperform? And back then, was your objective to, okay, I want to win because of the kind of the social standing that comes with that, or I want to win because I can generate a return from that process?
So I'm very competitive person, so I immediately looked to, you know, what's the leaderboard, there's like rewards for the season if you're, you know, top 300, and I had found the Discord after that, because I was like, okay, I clearly don't know what I'm doing. So I was like in the arena chat of the Discord like every day, trying to find out what's the meta, what's good axes, like learning more about the comp, you know, and how different axes stack up against each other, et cetera, et cetera. I was chatting with like Indies, who was the number one at the time. And I mean, he's still top five for sure. And back then it was less than 50,000 users. So the Discord wasn't as crazy as it is now. So like he was jumping in and answering questions and helping out. Like, shout out to him for doing that. And I think he's still in there every now and then. But yeah, it was definitely like the first 2 weeks, right? It takes 2 weeks to get paid out. So the first 2 weeks, it was kind of like, you know, I don't know. We'll see like how much money actually comes out of this, right? And then I'll just focus on trying to climb the leaderboard.
Okay, very cool. So back then it was really about being competitive and maybe making some money on the side. It wasn't really the main objective. And so you mentioned that there is a top five player. You said his name was like Indies or something?
Yeah. Indies.
Okay. Indies. Okay, so this person, are they, like, how are they so good? Are they like some sort of quant who is like analyzing all this different data and then, you know, assembling the correct team to battle? Or do they just play a lot, so they really understand the meta, or you know, how is that person sustainably so competitive?
Yeah, so he had been in for a while, and I think it really comes down to like how well you know the parts and the cards. And I wasn't like this back then, but now if you showed me an Axie, I could tell you exactly what parts they have, what cards they have. And then there's other aspects of the game that he's very, very good at, which is, you know, energy management. He's able, he counts how much energy the other player has that he's playing against. He keeps track of the cards that they used. You know, with the deck shuffle, you can only get two of the same card until the entire deck is gone through. So he does a very good job of like counting those cards. And then, of course, you know, team composition. So he makes sure that, you know, to be a top player, your team has to be able to do fare well against, you know, 90% of the teams out there. So there's a lot that goes into it. And it takes a lot of, you know, strategy, keeping track of what's going on in the game, making sure you don't miss anything. You really have to be dialed in to be, you know, climbing at that rate and staying at the top. It's not like you can just take a guess at how much energy is left or take a guess at what cards he has. You should understand the damage multipliers and what's going on in the game at all times.
Okay, so why do you think that Axie has become just so crazy popular in the past, you know, let's call it 9 months?
Yeah, I think you can't really ignore the, you know, financial incentive to it. And a lot of that came in July when SLP jumped to like 40 cents. But I think it's something very new. You know, we talk about play-to-earn gaming. And I talk a lot about, you know, opportunity costs when it comes to gaming. And I put out a little thread about it. But essentially the way I see it, there's two major costs to gaming today in its current state. And that's social opportunity cost and financial opportunity cost, right? Generally, when you're playing video games, you're at home. You're currently not generally with people. Previously, like, you know, you can do co-op and stuff like that, but just for the argument's sake, generally, like, most people today are playing at home on their, you know, Xbox or PC or whatever, and they're not with people. So there's a social opportunity cost there, and then there's a financial opportunity cost. When you're playing video games, you're not making any money. So the social opportunity cost was sort of diminished with like online gameplay. So when I was playing Apex and Warzone and all that stuff, the more fun that I was having was when I was playing with my friends, and it didn't really matter where they lived because of online gaming, right? And I can come on and chat with them and, you know, catch up and do all this stuff. So there's like this huge change in social opportunity cost for gaming when online gaming became a thing. And now with play-to-earn gaming, there's a huge change to the financial opportunity cost, because now you can spend this time gaming and be actually earning money for the time that you're putting into it. So I think from a very like high level theoretical point of view, anytime there's a reduction in opportunity cost of any activity, it's going to drive a lot more people to do that activity, right? And I think with Axie Infinity being the most stable and largest contributor to that is why it's been starting to blow up, so especially where that financial opportunity cost is drastically reduced or turned into a benefit in places in developing countries like the Philippines and Venezuela.
So would you say that the amount of social interaction that people are having through play-to-earn games such as Axie is actually greater than playing like Call of Duty Online or Halo Online or whatever? Like, is that fair to say? And the reason being is because there's that financial incentive, so everyone like tends to want to work with each other even more than just playing a game for fun?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. You know, because the one thing about playing those other games is you have your time to play has to align with the time that your friends are online. But with Axie Infinity and you know, being part of a large guild, you know, we have like 2,000 scholars. There's always going to be someone online to chat with you and hang out with you and talk about the cards you're using or your win streak, your lose streak, or whatever else. I mean, my scholars are posting pictures of them hanging out in real life after meeting through being part of our guild. And, you know, this is actually building a lot of really close friendships. And these people have been stuck inside for a year and a half because of COVID. And, you know, the only people they're spending time with is people in the guild with them, people that are playing Axie with them. So this is like, it's actually changing their lives in terms of the friendships that they're creating and the people that they're hanging out with and, you know, what they can do socially. I think people are just very social, innately, and, you know, having the benefit of being in a guild really makes this a lot more enjoyable.
Awesome. Okay. So yeah, speaking of being able to like generate yield from Axie, what are the different ways that people can actually do that? I know like, if you're really good at breeding, you can breed really great Axies and sell them, or you can, battle and earn SLP, or like, can you just take me through the different methods that people can different actions people can take in order to generate yield from Axie?
Yeah. So there's a lot of, different ways to do it, right? And it doesn't have to be directly from the game. But from the game specifically, winning battles in arena will earn you SLP. There's limited earning potential in adventure as well, which is against like bots. So play player versus environment. Being at the top of the leaderboard at the end of the season, as I mentioned, it's becoming harder and harder as more players join. But, top 300 earns AXS rewards. And then breeding is another way. So you can breed two Axies by burning SLP and AXS to create new Axies, which you can then sell on the marketplace. And then there's some of the more creative ways. So flipping Axies, I've seen people that buy Axies near the floor that maybe the owner doesn't see as much value in, but they do, and they can list them higher in the marketplace to earn a little bit of profit there. Then there's also being a guild manager, where you don't really have to be playing, but you have players playing for you. So that's where like the investors would come in, and they would, you know, pay a guild manager to manage their investments and do that thing, that sort of. So running scholarships, and then there's art and building on top of the Axie brand. Of course, there's other ways I've seen people earn. So there's a pretty large ecosystem outside of just the game, that is, you know, reap for someone coming in and benefiting from. You don't have to actually play the game to be earning from the Axie ecosystem.
Very cool. Okay, so at first you were mentioning different actions that you could take that are directly involved in the game, but then you mentioned guild manager and also like creating art or kind of different, you know, like assets that can exist on top of the Axie brand. Those actions, those are not directly, I mean, they are very deeply involved in Axie, but like, you know, to be specific, they're not like directly involved in the actual gameplay. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a large following of Axie Infinity, right? There's over 2 million daily active users. And the more you get into the game, the more, you know, you feel attached to it. So there's going to be merchandise, there's going to be like toys and all this other stuff that I can definitely envision being created as the community grows. And someone shared a chart of, you know, Pokemon revenue over the past like 20 years or so. And I think it was like 30% from the actual games and 70% from IP. And I definitely see there being a massive opportunity similar to Pokemon for Axie Infinity. And it's also going to benefit, you know, the game as well, because it'll draw more people to the game and, you know, get them curious about what's going on. Why are all these people wearing Axie Infinity shirts? Why does this guy have an Axie profile picture? You know, Alexis Ohanian had one for a few weeks. which I'm sure people were asking him, like, what is this thing in your photo?
So cool. Okay, so you mentioned guild manager and you said like running scholarships. Can you explain like what is a scholarship? Because I hear that so often with Axie.
Yeah, so a scholarship is actually something that was thought up by the community. It wasn't something developed by Axie Infinity, which I think a lot of people aren't aware of. Essentially, there was a community of members. His name's AK. Back in around September of last year, who had this large wallet full of axes, right? More axes than he could do anything with, because you can only play with three at a time in the current state. So he's like, what if I, like, there's plenty of people in this Discord that are wanting to play but don't have the financial capacity to put into the game. What if I just let them borrow my axes until they earned enough SLP to where they could buy their own? And that's kind of the idea behind it, and why he called it a scholarship, because the idea is after a while you graduate, right, and you buy your own axes, and then while earning with someone else's axes, you know, you give them a cut. So what Ready Player DAO does is we give 70% to our scholars and they keep 30%, and that allows them to earn without a massive initial investment, so that they can potentially buy their own axes.
Awesome. Okay, so we've been diving super deep into Axie, and you mentioned Ready Player DAO. So could you describe to me what is Ready Player DAO and why is it exciting?
Yeah, so Ready Player DAO is a play-to-earn gaming investment fund. And, you know, the way it started was I was running my own scholarship. It was just me. And then back in July, I realized that there was an opportunity for expansion through helping others invest into Axie Infinity. Because the problem is, you know, as a regular investor, you don't have time to manage scholars, right? And you also probably don't know anything about the axes or how to take advantage of you know, buying axes and giving the scholars. Because if you try to do it yourself and you don't have that experience, you probably won't get very far, because you might end up giving bad axes to your scholars or teams that don't make sense, et cetera, et cetera. So there's an excess of investors that are interested in the returns of Axie, but maybe aren't interested in spending that much time to get into it. So, you know, I put a feeler out that, you know, on Twitter, and I was like, hey, I'm willing to handle your investments if you're looking to invest in Axie Infinity. I currently run a guild and scholar. It's pretty successful. Like, please reach out if you're interested. So from that, you know, spawned a few conversations that turned into Ready Player DAO, which is about 36 members of people from all over the NFT space. You know, we have some funds in there. We have other DAOs that are in there, and even other, you know, companies. And from that, the direction we wanted to take was just to invest in play-to-earn gaming in various ways. So we don't focus specifically on just scholarships. We want to do other stuff as well. We're looking to improve the space in any way we can. And we have people looking to provide guidance on how to do taxes per se, and like how to approach that. We want to fix, you know, on-ramp issues and invest in ways to do that. We want to help with payout. You know, currently the scholars are having to, you know, pay high gas prices to get their payouts from Axie Infinity. So, like, that's something that we're trying to look at and trying to find people to partner with to solve. So there's a few other things that we're, you know, we also dabble in. And we also, of course, are looking at what's next, like what's coming out next. There's not going to be another Axie Infinity, but maybe there's something else that's also successful that is coming out. So we're taking some speculative bets. We're betting on, you know, teams that we think have great ideas and have the drive and are looking to build something similar, because, you know, Axie might not be for everybody.
Awesome. Okay, so how does the DAO mechanically operate? Because DAOs are kind of these newfangled things that are, you know, it's often requires consensus to kind of go through an action. And if there's a lot of people, you mentioned there's 36 members in the DAO. If there's a lot of people, it's hard to get quorum because you have to get kind of the majority to vote, or sometimes it's like 20% to vote. Like, it really depends. So, like, could you go through like the actual mechanical operations of, I guess, the DAO governance and how decisions are made?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you mentioned, 36 people is a lot, and getting them to vote on something is not easy. But what we ended up doing is splitting up into working groups. So we have, you know, select members that are focused on different areas that the DAO is trying to move in. And I think that's a major benefit of having so many people in the DAO, right? It's more of a brain trust. And like, if you're aware, I'm sure you're aware of the DAO structure, but, you know, everybody has equal vote and equal say. But with the working teams approach, you know, we're able to go in several different directions without needing everybody's attention on the one thing. And we also have, you know, a fast team, which is able to vote on smaller denomination plays, because we realize that, hey, there's times where, you know, maybe we only have a few hours to move on something, or we want to move on something quick because something's coming out, or there's a drop upcoming, or, hey, we just realized this high value asset's on the floor. We want to scoop it before anyone else has a chance to, et cetera, et cetera. So for like smaller denomination plays, we have a fast team that can move on things like that. And then of course, like anything major will still need the DAO, like the entire DAO vote. But we try to ensure that we stay, you know, agile with those working teams. And then, you know, we have the help of Aaron Wright in OpenLaw, who's actually a member of the DAO, to build out our DApp and our smart contracts, which will actually be coming at the end of this week, to assist in the voting processes.
Awesome. Okay, so can you dive into how the DAO actually generates yield? I understand there's some scholarships, but what other ways is the DAO actually generating yield?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, there's the scholarships, which is the largest part right now. We're very much in like startup mode, so we're trying to tie into what's stable and what's, you know, profitable at the moment so that we can grow, generate yield, and then invest in other places. So we're very heavily leaning into scholarships, but we also, you know, have AXS that's staked. We have other tokens that's staked. You know, we are making plays in other games, making other investments that, you know, may not generate yield immediately, but, you know, we can also flip some of that if we need to, or, you know, invest in other ways. And we're also looking at other play-to-earn games that are coming out that are generating yield, right? So I guess the short answer is, you know, it is like 80% scholarships. The other 20% is going to be long-term bets and investments.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So can you explain to me, what would you say, like, Ready Player DAO, what is Ready Player DAO's edge over other guilds?
Yeah. So, you know, this is a question we get a lot, and especially like when people talk about YGG. And I think the edge is that we are a brain trust. We are extremely diverse in the members of the guild. You know, and I come from the open source community at Red Hat, and, you know, I have a lot of emphasis on diversity, because what happens is, you know, when you're approaching a problem, you have, you know, different viewpoints that are able to find the best solution to that problem. That's the whole idea behind open sourcing anything. So, you know, beyond that, we do also keep our scholarships in-house in Ready Scholar School. You know, we have a lot of automation that's built out to help us grow that and scale it. And then that's built on top of the community. So we're kind of also open sourcing our approach to scaling out our guild, which has, you know, it's been going extremely well so far. You know, even from 150 scholars to 2,000 scholars, it's still extremely manageable, and you know, we haven't seen any growing pains yet, and we're gonna, you know, stick with that approach until, you know, we do, and then we'll figure it out. We'll, you know, take a different approach from there. But, you know, at 2,000 scholars, at 10,000 scholars, I think it's gonna be very much the same. What we do is we invest in members of our community that are providing value to that community. So we have scholar moderators, we have esports teams, we have scholar coaches, you know, we have scholar artists, we have scholars that run a newsletter, and these are all things that they just started doing and that we reward them for doing. So if you're part of the Ready Player DAO community and you start providing value in a way that you see fit, and we recognize that and we start rewarding you. So we kind of build on top of our scholar community, and that's how we grow. And then other large guilds end up sending accounts to other guilds to manage for them. But what we want to do is we want to have our scholars and our community be proud to be part of that community. So we want to keep them you know, together. We don't want to separate them out into, you know, 50 different discords across 50 different guilds, because that's like the whole social aspect of it is something that, you know, we talked about earlier that I think is extremely important. The other thing is I think we have the expertise of other large DAOs. You know, we have Flamingo DAO members, we have the Lao members in Ready Player DAO, and these guys have been around for a while, and they also invest in games, they invest in NFTs in general, and we get, you know, some of their expertise, some of their research, some information from the things that they've looked into to help us grow. We get direction from them and how they've done things, and it helps us, you know, decide where to move next and how to do it, and, you know, how to grow and how to form our DAO and make sure it's efficient. So that those are the things that I guess I would personally see as an edge over other guilds that maybe don't have the experience or background or the community.
Awesome. Okay, so you also have something called Ready Scholar School. Could you describe to me like what that is?
Yeah, so that's the you know, scholar management arm of Ready Player DAO. So essentially that's just where the scholars hang out. That's where, you know, the scholars learn from each other. When you join as a Ready Player DAO scholar, you're joining the Ready Scholar School. So it's very much a part of Ready Player DAO, and where all the Ready Player DAO scholars are living right now.
Very cool. Okay, so with these scholars, is there a platform, or do you guys like make this yourself, where everything is like super easy, click here, done, or is it quite manual where you're kind of allocating certain resources to certain teams constantly?
So what do you mean by allocating resources? You mean sending the axes, or?
Yeah, sending the axes, and then, you know, they're sending some portions of the SLP back, and like is that process all automated, or is it very like you just, is it almost just like spreadsheets?
Oh no, yeah, it's so we have paid automation, so all of our scholars are uploaded into a database, which you know, will track and manage all of that, and then, you know, I just run a script that will pay them all out every 2 weeks. So that's very much automated. You know, we are working on breeding automation, we're working on account creation automation to where once the XYZs are bred, it'll send out to Scholar accounts so that we can hand them out. So this is all, you know, part of scaling, making sure things are automated where they can be. Because, you know, of course, you don't really need someone to be paid to be doing that all day long when, you know, it's something that can be automated. And that is something that we're looking at into potentially building a SaaS product that can do this for other guilds as well. That'll probably be, you know, another way we generate yield.
Very cool. And then in terms of like allocating, I don't know if you often will switch up axes for different scholars, but let's say that for whatever reason, you know, you needed to change the team makeup for, you know, your scholars. So like, okay, it's like beast, whatever. There's a certain meta, and then the meta changes, and you're like, okay, now we need to give our scholars like totally new axes. Is there a way to easily transfer those over through Ready Player DAO, or is that already taken care of by Axie?
Yeah, so right now we have like a coaching channel in our Discord. And, you know, the first step is, okay, someone's dropped below this benchmark of matchmaking rank, right, MMR. They'll go in there and request a coach, and the coach will review their team and, you know, help do some walkthrough of gameplay and help them figure out how to work their cards and stuff. If the coach, you know, decides that, you know, the team is still not performing well, then they bring it up to a mod, and, you know, mod can reach out to Ready Player DAO member, and we will look at their axes and switch them if they need to. This has only happened, you know, a handful of times. Generally, we review the teams that go out. We don't try to chase, you know, any top metas. We try to make sure that their team has good composition so where it can last between any kind of card balances. And we have a very diverse set of teams. I was surprised to hear, you know, different guilds mentioning that they only give out one specific type of team, because it sounds like a huge risk. So something that we've been doing is making sure we have a very, very diverse set of teams, but that they also have like good team composition so that they can, so that we avoid any kind of, you know, one card balance that could rug us, right? That would be a bad case scenario. So that's somewhere where we've definitely diversified and thought through the approach at length.
Very cool. Okay, so it's not, it's only happened a few times. You said that instance of people needing to get new axes. So it's very unusual for you to have to transfer different axes to different scholars or different players.
Yeah, absolutely. I can probably count on my hands how many times we've done it. And there's also been times where, you know, someone's playing style just might not align with, you know, the axie team that they have. We had, you know, someone near like 1100 MMR with almost the exact same team as someone that's like, you know, top 20 in the guild. And it's just, sometimes it's just about, you know, how you approach the game, what your playing style is. Everybody's different, right? And you can see that in traditional games. Like you have the person that likes to stay back and like snipe. You have the person that likes to rush in. You like the guy, you know, everybody has a different playing style, and sometimes things don't add up. So we have like, I have like swapped, instead of like changing axes in their team, just like swap their accounts to a different one and then rehanded out the first one. But yeah, like I said, it's pretty rare. It's not something we come across often. We are very careful in like the team creation and making sure that the team composition makes sense.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, so this is kind of now moving a little bit beyond Ready Player DAO specifically, but do you think that play-to-earn guilds are going to have to specialize going forward? Because right now, you know, the main play-to-earn game is Axie, but in the near future, there's going to be, you know, 50 plus, right? And so do you think that the guilds will have to specialize, like, because they won't be able to take over, you know, they won't be able to be very active in all these games? Like, do you think that, like, Ready Player DAO, for example, would focus on, like, I don't know, top 10 or something like that? Or do you think that it'll just grow, you know, like as there are so many play-to-earn games, so, you know, these guilds will adapt.
Yeah, I think there's going to be two major approaches, right? I think, like you said, you either do the, you know, top five, top 10 games and just go heavy into those because they are, you know, the top, the most popular. Or you try to be like a play to earn index, right? So you can try to approach and have scholars in every game there is, to go the quantity route, or you can go to the quality route and try to stick to, you know, the top five games. And, you know, I'm sure both will be pretty successful. I know, you know, there are guilds that are taking, that are trying to take one approach or the other. And it's just going to depend on how you do it and what your stake is going to be.
Okay, so speaking of play to earn, what do you think when people say that Axie's economy is currently unsustainable?
Yeah, so I've seen a lot of, I guess, criticism around, you know, how it works, and you know, people like to throw the word Ponzi around, but it doesn't. If you really look into the tokenomics and, you know, look into the game and see how it works, it doesn't really make sense to call it a Ponzi. It there's like an inherent value. There's something that's actually occurring in people playing the video game, and it has a lot of staying power. Like Jiho, the founder, one of the co-founders, likes to tweet out those statistics of how much staying power and retention it has. And if, you know, people will have complaints about SLP, but if you look at the charts of, you know, the burn rate and the mint rate, everything was pretty in sync until, you know, August, because there was a big boom in July, and the team has done a few changes in that, and there are more to come, and they're working on, you know, different burn mechanisms. You know, they just had another change just recently, and there are going to be more in the future, and there's also like land play that's going to come out, and the team recognizes that, you know, there are different, like, they have burn mechanisms in place that they're waiting to release, but they also want to ensure that they're able to handle another boom in player base. I'm not sure if you had an eye on Axie Infinity back in July, but the game was down for a week after a massive boom in daily active users. So they want to ensure that they have all their ducks in a row and everything's set up to handle any kind of massive growth before they release some more of the burn mechanisms or do anything else to stabilize, you know, SLP. And even with the two recent changes, if you look at the burn mint charts, they're getting back towards, you know, 50-50. So it's already getting back to, you know, very stable burning for SLP. And you know, I very much think that the team behind Axie Infinity knows what they're doing. You know, they have economists. They're always talking to people, and other teams and other experts in the area to ensure that they have stability there. And I think one of the major problems is there's a lot of instant gratification in this space. And people fail to look at the long term and are very focused on the short term, which is where a lot of the criticism comes.
So how do you think about the, I guess, platform risk? Because right now, Axie is the main kind of way that people are generating yield in play to earn. And, you know, that's pretty scalable up to a point. But I feel like now that there's a lot of participants. But in the future, there's going to be, you know, 50 of these things. But for right now, there's only really one. And so how do you think about platform risk?
So when you say platform risk, are you referring to like people leaving to other games and?
No, but basically just referring to right now, all the yield is being generated from one game. And let's say that Axie is like, hey, we're going to do a massive update and we're going to go down for like 1 month. Then like, you know, then in theory, the yield that Ready Player DAO generates would also go down for that month. So how do you think about that risk as Axie being the main venue that people generate yield from?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, Ready Player DAO is very much in it for the long term. You know, we have long-term assets holding as well. So I don't think we'd be, obviously, you know, being down for a month would not be great. But we are, you know, hedged in other areas. Like I mentioned before, we're looking at other play-to-earn games, investing in those, a lot of which just aren't out yet. You know, we're investing in, you know, trying to build out SaaS products, different Web3 tooling, you know, on-ramp and, you know, payout solutions, things like that. So we are very much diversified, and plan to do more in the future and find different approaches towards providing, you know, solutions and value to the play-to-earn gaming ecosystem outside of just holding scholarships. So it is something that we're growing towards. We are heavy in like scholarships right now because, like I mentioned, we are still in startup mode and trying to generate that yield so that we can apply it elsewhere. But that's definitely something that, you know, we're thinking through, and definitely making sure that we aren't in an extremely high risk situation in case something like that does happen. And we also, you know, see, you know, areas of risk like that and approach them with our own views of solutions. So like that I mentioned, we want to provide an approach towards taxes for players of the game and for guilds of the game. And that's a way that we're trying to fight off some of the risk, because, you know, if people aren't paying taxes, you know, there's that's a huge risk in terms of, you know, upsetting governments, and, you know, maybe they have different ways to backlash from that.
That makes sense. Okay, so moving away from that slightly, what besides play to earn, what sectors in crypto or NFTs are you personally most excited about?
Yeah, I think I'm very excited about blockchain. You know, with my time at Red Hat, you know, I talked to a few different government agencies, and you can really see that they are focused on it. They do have their eye on it. I think anywhere that has, you know, proof of ownership or need for a ledger is going to at least look at NFTs and blockchain and solutions that might come from that. But personally, I'm very excited about, you know, smart contracts in general, and how you can publicize those to prevent any kind of any issues that might come with, you know, privatized contracts. We've seen, you know, a lot of talks, you know, in the past few years about artists and professionals complaining about, you know, their pay or their contracts. And if all that's publicized and on a ledger, you can't really complain about it, right? Like, there was the issues around the women's soccer team complaining about their pay. And, you know, I think the contract came out to where, you know, they agreed on a certain scale of pay, and then they ended up performing better, and it would have benefited them if they went with the other one. There was the issues with, like, Taylor Swift and Spotify. You know, Susan G. Komen and the Breast Cancer Awareness Organization had issues with how much of the contributions were actually going to cancer research. Like, all of these things, I think, would benefit from publicized contracts, smart contracts that live on the blockchain, so that everybody can come in and say and see where the money's flowing and how people are interacting with it. And I think it just reduces a lot of those issues from these things being publicized.
That's awesome. Yeah. So just like increased transparency leads to better results, essentially.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So if you had, let's say, $1 billion today to focus on Ready Player DAO, and you had unlimited access to like 1,000 of the smartest developers in the world, what would you do?
That's a really tough question. You know, I think there are a lot of barriers to entries and issues that still need to be overcome in the crypto space, NFT space, and Playdarn gaming space. So personally, like, if you know, if I had a team of developers and, you know, infinite capital, like you're mentioning, those are the things I would tackle, because if those areas are solved for the, you know, larger space, it benefits everyone in the space. So like, if we help mitigate and fix crypto on ramp, it's going to help not only crypto but NFTs and Playdarn gaming. If we help fix you know, payouts, it's going to help not only Playdarn gaming, but it's going to help, you know, people that are in the NFTs and in cryptos. So I think those like larger problems are what need to be solved to gain more traction. And then of course, like lobbying. I don't think anybody really likes to talk politics and like go through all that stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, we do live in the countries we live in, and we do need Congress and, you know, political backing for this to be as successful as it should be. So those are the, I think those are the things this I would tackle.
Awesome. Okay. So in 5 to 10 years from now, where do you want to be? Like, what is the grand vision for everything that you're currently working on?
Yeah, I think the idea is to, you know, to make Ready Player DAO a larger brand, you know, to invest in the success of the future of Playdarn gaming, you know, mitigate a lot of the issues that, you know, we talked about. You know, we want to help these new Playdarn games be successful, and we want to help people around the world, you know, benefit from gaming and Playdarn gaming. So like, some of the things that we've talked about is, you know, taking Ready Player DAOs global. You know, we have scholars in Philippines, Venezuela, Uganda, India, etc. And we want to help the people in the developing countries there. A lot of the people that need the help the most don't have the access to the resources they need to play the game, right? Like, if you're in those countries and you have stable internet and you have a phone, like, yeah, you might still need the help, but it's really the people that don't have that that will need it the most. So one of the things that we want to do in the long term is potentially build out local communities too. We have a member in our DAO that was born and raised in Venezuela, and, you know, he has family in this remote fishing village that doesn't have internet. So if that's something that we could do, and like go in and, you know, build a community center or cafe where people can come and have access to the internet and potentially also, you know, play these games for like 2 to 3 hours and make some money, like, that could be life-changing. And I think there's a lot that can be done in developing countries to help build them up. And I think, I know it's very cliche, but like, cryptocurrency and you know, Playdarn gaming is very much an avenue to do that. There's a lot of wealth disparity in the world right now, and I think this is a way where people who have an excess of time and don't have an excess of capital can find ways to bridge that gap.
Awesome. All right, Rich, are you ready for the closing questions?
Let's do it.
Awesome. All right. What is your single favorite NFT that you own?
Does it count if Ready Player DAO owns it, or is it just me personally?
Good question. Let's do you personally and then Ready Player DAO.
Okay, so I think me personally, I own a Cool Cat, which is probably my highest value NFT. That's not a Playdarn game NFT. And it has an attribute called Rich, where the face has this like fancy monocle and like mustache and stuff. And I was like, all right, if I gotta have this cat if it's gonna be named after me. So I like bit the bullet and grabbed that, and it's probably my highest value purchase outside of Axie Infinity to date for NFTs. So I'm very fond of it, and I'm not selling.
I love that. Love that. All right. So what is your favorite asset within Ready Player DAO?
It's definitely our Mystic Poseidon. I pretty much handpicked him. He has the Candy Babylonia Mystic part, which is like this blue and red horn on him. And he's very much like viable in Arena. So I've like built a team around him. And I love just going on stream and like beating people in Arena with $150,000 Axie. Like, I think that's the funniest thing ever, because a lot of those Mystics, like, yeah, they look good and, you know, they have their Mystic parts, but they're really not as competitive as one that you'll handpick for Arena. And the fact that we were able to get one that looks cool, he has an awesome name. We did a cool competition to name him, and I can beat people in Arena with him. I think that just adds to a lot of the fun that can be had with him.
Love it. Love it. Awesome. Okay, so what is your most controversial thought relating to crypto or NFTs?
I think my most controversial thought will probably be that play-to-earn gaming will eclipse your profile picture NFTs. And it might not be that controversial. Might add to the controversial thought of it that maybe only like 0.1% of those profile picture NFTs will last through any kind of crypto or like NFT winner. I think there's a lot of cool projects that are out there, but realistically, for the high value ones to stay and even like mid value ones to stay where they are, a lot of the smaller ones will have to go away. And unfortunately, like, due to that controversial thought, I've actually missed out on a lot of projects that have done pretty well. Like, when I first started, it was around the time that Bored Ape was minting, and I missed out on that because I was like, you know, CryptoPunks is a big one. I'm not sure about like the profile pictures. I wanted to stick into play-to-earn gaming and like NFTs with utility. But yeah, I think utility is going to eclipse, you know, a lot of what's out there today. Granted, I think the community behind like CryptoPunks and Bored Apes and Cool Cats are amazing, and why they are going to have so much staying power. But a lot of what's popping up nowadays is just not original, in my opinion. And trying to build on top of the success of those, you know, first few projects, and most likely won't last.
All right. If you could snap your fingers and instantly change or improve one thing in the crypto/NFT ecosystem, what would it be?
Gas fees. I think a lot of people might agree with that one. You know, I'm excited for what's to come. I'm a fan of a lot of the layer twos. What I'm not a fan of is like the user experience to get from ETH to those layer twos. And I'm not a fan of the gas fees on ETH. So I think the one thing that I would like just solve right now, if I could, would be either reducing Ethereum gas fees and transaction time, or trying to figure out a way to instantaneously bridge to a layer two to do some of the processing and just build on top of Ethereum.
Awesome. All right. Last question. Where do you see the NFT ecosystem in 3 years?
I think it's going to be massive. I think specifically, like, I know I keep talking about play-to-earn gaming and how bullish I am on it, but like the way I see it is like right now we're playing with the Atari. I think in, you know, 3 to 5 years, we might be playing with the PlayStation or the Xbox. So I'm like, I'm very excited to get there. And I can't wait till I can rock my NFT wearables in a VR world. that may or may not be called the Oasis.
Love it. Love it, Rich. Awesome. All right. Well, man, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you taking the time. And I just loved hearing about your background and telling me about how, you know, the government is operating their tech stack. Partly, it's really cool to see the dichotomy of that. And also, you know, going from that, being able to dive really, really deep into Axie, that was super exciting because, you know, there's a lot of things that even I don't know very deeply about. So thank you for kind of explaining that whole process. And of course, Ready Player DAO is unbelievably exciting and really happy to see the progress on that and looking forward to the future. If people want to find out more about yourself, find out more about Ready Player DAO, where should they go? What should they do?
Yeah, so, you know, Twitter, I think, is the number one place where we're very active on. So Twitter, Ready Player DAO, Ready Scholar is our Ready Scholar School, which it just has more information in like the newsletter around our scholars. And then I'm Rio Cabrera, RSS. And you can always reach out to me if you have questions. I do my best to answer, you know, everybody. And yeah, well, hopefully we'll have our D app out soon. We are going to start trying to post on our Medium blog more as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Rich, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, everyone. Stay tuned for more episodes of the ZemaRed podcast and subscribe to the ZemaRed newsletter for more info on all things NFTs. Thanks so much for listening.